The name like UNHCR, can you blame anyone for being confused about what we do? Behind those five letters are extraordinary everyday heroes and teams on the ground mobilizing to deliver relief, reunite families, and provide safety to people caught in the crossfire. We are the UN Refugee Agency when home is no longer safe. Our thousands of dedicated staff are there with on-the-ground support and long-term solutions to help refugees not only survive, but thrive. Learn more at unrefugees.org.
The best barbecue in Virginia can only be found at Monk's Barbecue in Purcellville, Virginia. Check them out at Monk's BBQ on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and at monksq.com. If you're interested in buying or selling a home, there's only one person you should call, and that's Joe Azer. You can reach him at 571-989-2937. That's 571-989-AZER. This is Both Kinds of Sports, where we cover and analyze the NFL and the NFL offseason. Welcome, everybody, to Both Types of Sports, covering the NFL and NFL offseason. I'm Chad Dukes. That is Gigantor. What was your new name? The Consummate Funk?
Permanent Funk.
That's my guy, the Permanent Funk over there. We got a big show planned for you today. Doesn't matter that as we are recording it, it is the 8th of July. Anything going on in the NFL offseason is still more interesting than anything going on in the regular season for Major League Baseball. Pound it up your pound hole, Fleur. Tom Thayer will join us today on the program. He is the Bears color commentator for ESPN Radio WMVP in the Second City. You know why they call it that?
Unfamiliar.
You really don't know?
I don't think so.
Because the city burned down. So they built the second city on top of it. You should have known that. Said fucking goat.
Yes. Yes, I did it. I burned down Chicago because of the opulence the Blackhawks have had over the course of the history of their franchise ownership. Yes. Yes.
So we'll talk Bears. One of the more interesting teams moving into the 2024 campaign tour. We are... what? Less than 3 weeks away from the Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio? I think that feels right.
It feels right. It's been a long slog, but seeing actual jerseys on a field will feel good again.
Bears and the Houston Texans will slug it out. Devin Hester going into the Hall of Fame. That's a guy that I know you remember playing. I love return guys going in.
It's good to see that, you know, the tertiary aspect of the game is being rewarded if you have an exceptional player like Devin Hester. And, yeah, him and Ray Guy and Vinatieri could and should all be in there.
Boy, B. Mitch?
Should be in there.
Is Tariq Cohen, did he get signed by the Jets this offseason? I want to say he did. I want to say he took 2 years off. They brought him back because this Fakakta rule, this kickoff change that's taken place, has this league shook. Was I right or wrong? They signed some geezer returnman that I was excited to see that I didn't know was still playing football.
The Jets signed Jamison Crowder last year.
No, that's not it. The Jets signed Jamison Crowder every other year. They sign him and they cut him and they sign him and cut him.
Cohen is on the Jets.
All right, dickhead. Why are you no selling me?
I was looking for it.
I mean, you're no selling your pal big time over here. All right, well, we'll bring on a pro, Tom Thayer, played in the NFL. We'll talk Bears with him. So to start, let's start with the Bears. Gigantor. Matt Eberflus is the betting favorite to win Coach of the Year. That is a sentence I didn't ever think that I would have to say. Before the Bears started stacking first-round picks like cordwood. But the arrival of Caleb Williams has everybody all steamed up. Plus, they've got an unbelievable on paper wide receiver core. DeAndre Swift gets brought over. Their defense looks to be much improved. So, Eberflus has compiled a record of 10-24, but he made it to year 3. And I guess that was enough for DraftKings to come out and say his odds to win the award are plus 900. That is the best of the lot. Do you want to guess who the next two names are? I bet you could get one of them.
Coach of the Year. Well, the Coach of the Year criteria has somewhat shifted from the best coach to the
Yeah, they don't give it to Andy Reid.
To the turnaround coach of the year.
They don't give it to Kyle Shanahan.
No. Who would?
One's easy.
Yeah, I guess Harbaugh would be in contention.
Harbaugh's one of the two. Plus 1,100. He is tied with... You're going to kick yourself.
Oh, goodness.
Robert Saleh.
Oh, gee. What?
Well, they were terrible, yeah. And they could, you know, they could win 10 games this year.
They're not... Okay. Yeah, that's fine. I just... Coach of the year should be the coach of the year.
I agree.
Whoever did the best coaching job, not this is a America's Got Talent. We didn't think he could sing.
Who won last year? Was it D'Amico Ryans or was it Stefanski? Did he win? I would have probably given it to Stefanski for getting to the playoffs with Joe Flacco. Matt LaFleur plus 1,200. And guess who's right there with him? Raheem Morris and D'Amico Ryans, both at plus 1,300. And Cardinals coach Jonathan Gannon is tied with Dan Campbell at the next level for plus 1,500.
It's just coaches on bad teams.
So Dan Campbell got it last year. He had to, right?
Stefanski got it.
Okay. It had to be one of those three guys.
Yeah,
I would assume. You know, I kind of would fuck around and maybe consider putting on there is Mike McDaniel. I feel like if they can figure out a way to close out a season, win 13 games, go to the postseason, win that division.
Well, he'd be a, you know, prototype option for them right now. They're hoping. I think Mike McDaniel can make a run and really start innovating the offense all over again and all his shtick, playing the cold better.
Dan Quinn not getting a lot of love.
No.
Not Brian Callahan either. I didn't see his name on this list. Anyway, yeah, I don't think...
Was Raheem on the list?
He was. I told you. Who's he tied with? I just read it to you. You weren't paying attention. D'Amico Ryans. Tied with him.
It's not even... All right. It's off-season odds, I guess.
What was the Falcons' record last year?
Like 7 wins.
They can win 10 wins. They can win the division. They win 10 wins in the division. They'd love to give it to Raheem Morris. I don't know. It's not a stretch to think the Giants, the Bears are going to be much better. Even if they're ultimately a one and done in the playoffs or fighting for the wild card down to the end, I still think he could have a chance to win that.
I think they have a legit shot.
At what?
At
the division?
Yeah, yeah.
They're not winning the division. I mean, unless the wheels come off in Detroit. Detroit is fucking loaded. Even if they're in shootouts every week, Detroit should be the favorite with that division. And Green Bay loses one of the hottest teams in the league towards the end of the year. And I think Minnesota's going to be at least a 500 team.
Is 10 wins their expectation this year?
Who?
The Bears.
No. I don't. Maybe some of the sycophants, but I would say 8-9 wins. That's a good goal for a rookie quarterback, goddamn it.
Yeah.
Year 2 is where you make that stride.
Well, it's offseason, so quarterbacks dominate the news cycle. Mark Schlereth last week.
Oh, what's his nickname? I've never heard it. They never bring it up.
On his show, the Stinkin' Truth Podcast.
Ah, there it is.
He had some thoughts on Lamar Jackson and Baltimore and their stretch together so far and how the Ravens have failed to really develop the receivers, and Lamar has failed to develop the receivers.
This got a little bit of run over the weekend.
Yeah. We have the audio of Schlereth's deemed rant, where I thought it was mostly points, but...
You think he gets final say over what they put up? Because the social media team grabbed this clip and then put it out on social media for people. Because, I mean, you know, it's the bite-sized morsels that are going to get picked up.
I think he did have final say. If you're calling your show The Stinkin' Truth.
The Stinkin' Truth.
And you want to have a point that resonates that theme, this is what would be cleared off the post.
Here's what I'll tell you, man. I don't like the term dick riders. Lamar has got an army of dudes that if anyone says anything about him, they will fight to the death on social media.
He's got Baltimore fans. All the people from Florida. He's got college football fans.
And else people just like running quarterbacks, too.
Right.
But go ahead and play the comments, and we'll comment on them.
I do not want to hear from all of you out there that are telling me that Lamar Jackson, well, they don't get him weapons. How many first-round wide receivers do you need to draft? Well, they're not drafting the right one. Well, you're not developing them. Well, how do you develop them? Well, your quarterback has a long way to go in developing wide receivers. So I don't want to hear that bullshit from you anymore. Any of you Baltimore fans, I'm tired of it. They drafted first round talent. They've drafted tight ends in the first round. They've drafted 3 different wide receivers since 2018 in the first round. I mean, Aaron Rodgers went, 16, 17 years with the Green Bay Packers? They never drafted a guy in the first round, whether it was a tight end or a wide receiver for him. So don't tell me about it. I mean, it's one of those things. Don't tell me about the pain. Show me the baby. Produce in the playoffs.
I understand the take, as the kids call it, and I think there's some validity there. Couple of arguments. One, it is not Lamar Jackson's fault that the Ravens had the number one rushing offense in the NFL and decided to run the ball 8 plays in the AFC Championship game.
Yeah.
That's not his fucking fault. The coaches shit down the side of their leg in Baltimore during the postseason as much as any player. I guess he's referring to Hayden Hurst, Hollywood Brown, Rashad Bateman. He's still on the team.
Yeah.
I think you could ask yourself, what are those guys doing away from the Ravens? You know, if they're these players that are underdeveloped by Lamar Jackson, they haven't necessarily popped anywhere else. Flowers and Andrews are both solid receiving targets drafted by this team. But he has good options there. What I've noticed is, if you criticize Lamar Jackson, there's a couple of things that always come up. And one of them, the race stuff gets brought up. And I think we got to be past that at some point at the quarterback position. You got to be able to criticize everybody, regardless of what their background is. And any quarterback, a lot of Lamar Jackson fans are out there saying, why aren't you saying this about Josh Allen? They do. They do say this about Josh Allen. Josh Allen gets criticized constantly.
He had a bad year last year, and the wheels are falling apart, and that's what it was covering. What's the disaster in Buffalo? Is the window closed? It was covered heavily.
Yeah, I mean, and then Justin Herbert, he got in a giant pile of money, but he's gotten, you know, criticisms. But people can also look at it and say those Chargers teams are poorly coached. I don't think anyone would say the Ravens teams are poorly coached. You have one of the best coaches in the league. You have a defense that always is going to play. You've designed the entire scheme around this one player. To accentuate everything that he does well, and they haven't been able to break through. And I think that is a valid argument. I don't think it negates everything that Lamar Jackson has covered. Now, the one part that I saw someone brought up, Tor, which was somewhat compelling, is the Chiefs drafted Mecole Hardman, they drafted Sky Moore, they bring in Kadarius Toney, they bring in all these different guys. Is Patrick Mahomes developing those guys? No. But I think your resume speaks for itself. Once you start winning chips, what's that? You don't have to fucking face these criticisms because you've been there and done that.
The Lamar situation, it feels like a lot of people are still waiting for an analyst or a host to say, oh, put him at running back or wide receiver again.
I think those days are over.
Yeah, they're still waiting on it. It's not happening. No, he's played quarterback in the NFL for 6 years. We're not switching the position up, so you're looking for something new to argue. And now that we've abandoned that and we've seen that, quarterback through and through, no issues here, now he's getting analyzed as a true quarterback. And true quarterbacks do get analyzed under a tighter microscope. They have more pressure. They have harsher comments said about him because they're the quarterback. So this is what happens when you are a real quarterback.
And I think the argument of, hey, they are investing. I mean, they paid Odell Beckham Jr. a bunch of money basically to say, hey, look, we're trying. I mean, they have invested in weapons for him, not in the same way we've seen the Miami Dolphins do or what we've seen the Chicago Bears do this offseason. But look, man, you're an MVP and you got a big, giant fucking deal and you're on a pretty good team and a market passionate about football.
They don't draft well at wide receiver.
No.
They draft well at 21 other positions.
A great point. It's interesting to me how Ravens fans, like, they want all of these praise they deserve from, like, Ozzie Newsome on down. Like, we draft, we develop, our guys get paid elsewhere, and then we just replace them. Right. But you don't do that with the pass catchers. So they're either really bad at that, which I find to be somewhat hard to believe because of how successful an organization front office the Ravens have, or there's a disconnect there with Lamar Jackson and some of these pass catchers. Now, go look at the depth charts of the guys catching passes on the years where he's winning MVPs. It's fucking impressive. But I don't think that criticism was... You could make the argument that Schlereth knew it was a slow week, and he knew that...
Yeah.
Because why are you playing this card right now? Like, why is this all of a sudden a hot button? I know everyone in Sports Talk Radio is looking for content, but it's pretty clear you wanted to stir everybody up, and he stirred everybody up.
Yeah, he didn't want to go LeBron, Cowboys, Yankees route. He took a, you know... A pretty heavily used route, but not as mainstream. So if you want to get people fired up in July, talk about why Lamar hasn't found true success with the wide receivers.
I can understand those criticisms as well. Speaking of hot button issues, Gigantor, we're going to talk about a guy that doesn't shy away from that. Cam Newton. Tell it's a slow week because there's just dozens and dozens of Cam Newton quotes out there. Former number one overall pick. The headline is Cam Newton says he would take Dak Prescott over Trevor Lawrence. What do you make of that statement just standing by itself?
Well, I'm happy he's not saying he'd be starting over Dak Prescott or Trevor Lawrence, which with Cam Newton and other
that's
quarterbacks.
What it, a year ago, that's what he would be
you
saying.
You would expect that, but yeah.
Here's the full quote real quick. Yeah. He was on the 4th and 1 podcast, his podcast, because every player and ex-player has a podcast. I would prefer Dak Prescott over Kirk Cousins, Kyler Murray. I would prefer Dak over Kyler Murray, Jalen Hurts. I would prefer Dak over Jalen Hurts, Lamar Jackson, Lamar, Justin Herbert, Dak, Jared Goff. I am going with Jared Goff. Joe Burrow, I am taking Joe Burrow. Trevor Lawrence, I am taking Dak. In my opinion, he's all over the board here, and it's just personal preference. I don't think saying that you would take Dak Prescott over Trevor Lawrence is all that controversial.
I don't think it's hot topic. I'm not, because we've said on this show, we're still waiting to be truly invested in Trevor Lawrence and that still remaining project in Jacksonville, where we know he's a good quarterback, and we saw, you know, best recruit out of college that we've seen in 30 years, all this, that. We're waiting for it too, Cam. We're waiting to see him reach the upper echelon. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he stays in the B-plus tier his whole career. He has a great one, makes $100 million, maybe more. Dak Prescott over him? I think I would also. He's more experienced. He's still... So far, he's survived quarterbacking the Dallas Cowboys and can get it done in the regular season as an efficient pocket passer.
Also, and I know Jaguars fans are some of the most volatile, but poverty franchise is going to poverty franchise.
Oh, yeah.
And the Jaguars doing something should in no way, shape, or form dictate to Jerry Jones how he should do what he wants to do. And Dak Prescott, by the way, has already gotten this bite at the Apple Tour. He's already got the deal. You know, not numerically the same, but the big deal after you outperform your contract and you sign your... This is an extension we're talking about here.
Yeah.
Like, this is Trevor Lawrence's first bite at that apple. And I think that what my first thing I would say to Tua Tagovailoa is, or go down the list, I don't care what Trevor Lawrence is making. I wouldn't pay Trevor Lawrence that much money. We're not the Jacksonville Jaguars. You're telling me you deserve what Joe Burrow gets? I disagree. So let's find something in the middle ground here where you could be incredibly rich, very successful. You could be surrounded by weapons, play in a great city. Fucking figure out a way to win.
Yeah. The NFL doesn't miss much with their pricing either. If a player really does get paid, they did something to deserve it. I don't want to pay money to these players.
No. And I don't want to pay. For Tua to say the market is the market. No, no, no. That was the market for the Jaguars.
Yeah.
That's not the market for the Miami Dolphins. And if I'm the Green Bay Packers, same thing. It's like, hey, dude, you've given us one half of one season. If you want to play the Kirk Cousins dance, we will. Everyone's screaming that I got to give you $55 million a year right now. Could go piss up a rope. That's not my market. I don't know. It's very, very odd to see what people think about what the Jacksonville Jaguars has anything to do. The situation's different. The personnel's different. Detroit's ready to win a Super Bowl. Is Jacksonville? They regressed last year.
Right.
So, you know, that's a different barrel that Jared Goff has Detroit over there currently.
I like that you talk about Jacksonville because their owner came out and made some comments. Shad Khan talking about the last couple years and dealing with free agency with the team. He wants to go in a different direction. He stated, I think there's a sea change for us, and this is for our coaching, that they have to develop young players. We cannot have this addiction to free agents. And then some of the notable ones as of late, Christian Kirk, Evan Ingram, Brandon Scherff, Foye Oluokun. They bring in a lot of free agents trying to plug the gap, and that's what poverty franchises do. And Khan saying, hey, we need to continue this a little more of a traditional route of team building in building up young players and draft picks, because you get at least 7 every year. You might as well try your best to make them real players. I like the approach. I do. The free agent signing addiction does get teams caught up plenty of times. Sometimes it works. Most of the time, it's like, oh, we kind of pushed off a problem until next year.
Well, who are we talking about just a moment ago? The Baltimore Ravens. I mean, this is their stock and trade. And if there's exceptions, Tor, as you know. If you've got Andy Reid and Pat Mahomes, you know, you can swing and miss on these free agency guys, but you're also just tweaking. Your core's there. Yeah. You got your dominant pass rusher. You got your offensive line. You got a scheme nobody can solve. If you're sitting there saying, oh, my God, we're 13th in the league in pass rush, but we're 27th in the league in stopping the run, let's just sign a bunch of tackles. It doesn't really work that way. It's the Dana Stubblefield, Big Daddy Dan Wilkinson effect. You've got to have that core there, and then you can tweak and add a piece here. And then you can do what the Rams did.
Yeah.
It's like, holy shit, we're a Super Bowl team. We bring in Matt Stafford. We bring home the trophy. That's the difference. So I think what he is saying is absolutely the way you build a healthy franchise.
I think it is.
We got to stick to it, though.
I think you only win a Super Bowl if you have I don't know, 8 players between 2 classes, 1 or 2 years away from their rookie deal being ended, that are starters or impact players. You need guys that are – you need to find them in the draft, and you need to develop them so at the end of that rookie contract they are contributing in the playoffs and getting a Super Bowl. That's how it works for me, because free agents, they're asking for too much money. At least the proven ones are.
Well, the difference too, Tor, is like – who are we talking to? We're talking to Tom Thayer today, right?
Yeah.
TJ Edwards is a linebacker, weak side linebacker for the Chicago Bears. He was undrafted. They brought him in. They scouted him. He played special teams. They gave him an opportunity. Played himself into a starting role. The guy had like 180 tackles last year.
Yeah.
Like, if you've got a department, people want to we have to draft Hall of Fame player. Oh, first overall pick, can't miss. No. You need, if you are consistently drafting guys second, third, fourth round that are getting in and contributing to your franchise and making plays and they become competent starters, that is the meat and potatoes of building a fucking winning franchise.
Look at the Los Angeles Rams defenses, you know, from the last 6 years. Discount Aaron Donald, but for the most part, you're looking at guys that they are drafting in the fifth round, fourth round, developing. I know Jalen Ramsey was a big free agent signing, but that team is a lot of undrafted, a lot of late round picks that are saying, you're going to learn how to play linebacker for us. That's how the situation is, because all of our offense is on money with money's on offense with these guys.
It is weird too, but Josh Reynolds hasn't looked the same since he left there. I mean, you talk about developing offensive talent, like Sean McVay and that fucking coaching tree that he has over there. That's all they do.
Yeah.
All right, very good. I got your Brandon Ayuk latest update. Is there anyone in this offseason, Tor, that is on an NFL roster that seems to be enjoying the attention more than Brandon Ayuk?
Ooh. No, this cycle, it's Ayuk's time.
Because it's not even CeeDee Lamb, like, clapping back on social media. Any of these other things that are happening, you know, T. Higgins saying, I want to trade. Brandon Ayuk is going on Instagram and trolling people on a regular basis. And we saw it with the setup fucking, whatever that was, FaceTime that he had with Jaden Daniels. They don't want me. The latest is, we know that he's named 2 teams, if the 49ers don't want him, that he'd like to go to. One is the Pittsburgh Steelers, which would make sense. One is the Washington Commanders. Pretty wild. Brandon Ayuk went on TikTok and posted him watching Commanders film of practice. Mm. And this is absolutely on purpose. I don't know if he believes this applies any pressure to the 49ers, because if I were his representation, I would assure him it does not. All this does is, I don't know if any of those guys in that locker room ultimately care. I know they all want him to get paid, but maybe that would be the only this is just for attention. This is just for people to continue to have him at the top of the cycle. And I'm sure he's frustrated. I'm sure he's looking around and saying, I'm as valuable as any of these assholes, and I'm tired of people telling me it's the system. But do you have any problem with this tour? Because I would say it's the most benign form of trolling possible. I'm watching a team that I've talked about in the past, their practice film.
How do you put pressure on a team that really thrives with you on it but doesn't necessarily need you?
Sure.
How does that happen? You have to use, I guess, ulterior measures or different means to try to get their attention.
Do you think this applies any pressure to the 49ers?
No.
I don't
think it does either. I think it is now commonplace of how a wide receiver trying to get a new deal would go about it. We're going to go to social media. We're going to get the fans involved. We're going to say, you need to keep Brandon. And maybe that does put pressure on the front offices. I think strong front offices don't listen that much to the outside noise, and they just think about the product on the field. But it does make an impact. I think at some point, at some layer, it does, if people won't stop talking about what a player that you're trying to sign and wants to sign with you is doing in his disgruntlement online.
I think that these guys, you're sitting there in an offseason where Justin Jefferson, A.J. Brown, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jaylen Waddle, Devontae Smith-Pelly, Nick Collins, they all get a fucking bag, and you're sitting there. All these receivers think they're better than each other. I'm better than those guys. Where's my fucking money?
Yeah.
And also, receivers are all crazy, and they're all narcissists, and I'm sure he's a nice guy, but, like, there's a little bit of that in them. So the only thing that it might – if I'm sitting here and I'm the Steelers, and they've already inquired about trading for him, by the way. Him and Debo. I think most people know that. I'm like, I think it might turn me off that he is this actively kind of campaigning against the team he's on now if I'm going to have to give up picks and then give this guy a Justin Jefferson deal.
I think Brandon Ayuk knows that he wants to stay in San Francisco. If I play with Jaden Daniels, a former college teammate in Washington, that'd be great. Well, it's not going to be.
It's not, and you're going to lose a lot, and you're going to have limited success, because why would we believe anything else is going to happen in Washington?
Yep.
Pittsburgh, that's different. They trade Deontay Johnson to Carolina this offseason. They need someone opposite. Pickens, I have to believe one of those quarterbacks is going to work out for. I really do.
One of the two, yes.
If I had to place money on it, I'd say Fields at some point, because I just think Russell Wilson's washed. But I don't know. The grass is not always greener, man, and you're with a Lamborghini offense. They keep calling Brandon Ayuk the Lamborghini.
Yeah.
You got to pay for the Lamborghini? No. The Lamborghini is Kyle Shanahan and the way that he puts his fucking offense out there.
If I'd be so pissed if I was Deontay Johnson. They shipped me to Carolina.
Dude, they didn't Kenny Pickett, too. They're like, you guys don't want to be here? We're going to fucking bury you in the ass end of the NFL. Pickett's never going to see the fucking field. He's just going to sit there and watch Jalen Hurts pout in the second half of the season.
This was a... Not Deontay Johnson. I'm saying, I'd rather do... Let's start the Europe team now. Let's do that. I'll try to be a superstar fan base.
They upgraded their wide receiver position in the draft and bringing him in. Like, I think they sent a bunch of linemen, spent a bunch of money there. So maybe, if the Panthers could just be competent,
yeah,
that would be an enormous step up for them.
He can't be Bryce Young up and down looking skittish in the backfield.
How could he not look skittish?
I know.
He's a goddamn crash test dummy.
Wide receivers are crazy, and they remain to be crazy. You have to be a little bit crazy to be
sure.
One. Even though it's not the threat of going across the middle and getting, you know, all of the air evacuated out of your chest by a big hit as much. It's still
very unique feeling.
A narcissistic position, and you have to go and want the ball and desire. And I guess these wide receivers have a chip on their shoulder. CeeDee Lamb and Cole Beasley, former teammates, mixing it up on Twitter. CeeDee Lamb posted a video of his offseason workouts, and then Beasley commented on it. Give me 180 targets off the couch, and I eclipse 1,000 being 1,000 yards. Stop looking at stats, check the tape. As far as getting open goes, I'm confident that I did it with the best.
Well, that was in response. His initial tweet, as I looked into this, was CeeDee Lamb was doing some crazy workout, and Cole Beasley was like, just do heavy squats and power cleans. What are you doing? And then tried to pretend like that's not a criticism of CeeDee. So look, I'm sure CeeDee Lamb's overly sensitive, but Cole Beasley criticized something he was doing, and then he started defending himself against all of the fucking, you know, sycophants, and that's when he put out that 180 targets, which, again, is not necessarily – it's not, hey, your mom's fat, but it's a shot at CeeDee Lamb.
Right.
How could it be anything but? And, like, he wanted to take a shot, and then when people said, hey, you're taking shots, he's like, hey, hold on a second, bro.
Beasley likes to mix it up. Well, he mixes it up a little too much for me, but I don't mind to mix up in this forum.
Well, mix it up, but then understand I'm mixing it up.
Yeah.
You can't be surprised when people go back at you, even if they're idiots.
I think CeeDee handled it well. He just basically said, okay, gotcha, man. We can go route for route. I'll get 1,000 yards easy. I'm CeeDee Lamb. That's fine. That was pretty standard boilerplate wide receiver comeback from him. It wasn't too over the top back and forth.
I just think that then Beasley said, stop being so sensitive, and CeeDee Lamb said, just chill. And it's like, you're both sensitive. It's very clear to me that both of you are sensitive. But if Cole Beasley is a former teammate of his, also shut the fuck up. Like, don't go out there. Your guy's still playing. If you want to enter the media realm and it's your job to criticize players and ESPN stroking you a big check, okay. But you're just tweeting out something, shitting on a fucking teammate or whatever he's doing, there's no reason for it. Unless you're a troll. And then if you're Chael Sonnen and you want to be the bad guy, then be the bad guy. People don't like being the bad guy. They want to be able to be the bad guy and then say, oh, no, that's not what I meant. We all know what you were trying to do. You wanted to get run on Twitter.
Do you want to enjoy your $800 or do you want to absolve, you know, to be absolved for taking it? You know,
what are you talking about?
That was a runny bee bit.
Oh,
when I stepped
you're doing
on
it on our football show.
Yeah,
I just don't even understand. You're spinning out of control over there. You had a beer in a couple of weeks. So you can tell his brain is oozing out of the side of his head. All right, that's enough. All right, we're good?
Yes,
right. Let's bring on Tom Thayer. He does this for a living. We're just a couple of fucking jagaloons. Current Chicago Bears color commentator, of course, analyst, ESPN Radio, WNVP in the Windy City. He joins us on the Monk's Barbecue Hotline next.
On Thursday, August 1st, the Chad Duke Show will be hosting our Hall of Fame game watch party at Monk's Barbecue. The party is free to attend and will feature an in-person Money Monk at his own restaurant. Plus, a burger eating contest, drink specials, the debut of the pigskin burger featuring no white goop, a brand new Chad Duke Show tea will be available at the event, and this will be the first ever candle exclusive episode. So save the date, August 1st at Monk's Barbecue for the Hall of Fame game watch party.
It is both types of sports. Subscribe, leave a 5-star review if you don't mind. Joining us on the Monk's Barbecue Hotline is Chicago Bears color commenter and analyst for ESPN Radio, WMVP in the Windy City. Pleased to be welcoming former NFL guard Tom Thayer on the program. Tom, thank you so much for joining us. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing good, Chad. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Man, I tell you what, I guarantee the summer doldrums are a little different in Chicago with so much going on year-round of a sporting nature. But the Bears, you know, if I'm ranking the salacious offseason storylines, it's, you know, Russell Wilson and Justin Fields in Pittsburgh. It's, you know, the Atlanta Falcons drafting a quarterback after they're giving Kirk Cousins all that money. But Caleb Williams, those wide receivers, that defense, the way that team played at the end of the year, wow, is there a lot of meat on the bone there? What's the conversation like just around the Chicago Bears after an offseason like this, which many franchises will never experience?
You know, there's probably a couple of storylines that go along with the Chicago Bears, because if you're looking at the back end of the defense, linebackers and defensive backs, they're as good as they're is in the league. When you think about the firepower they have at receiver, tight end, they brought in Gerald Everett to go along with Cole Kmet. They brought in DeAndre Swift to go in the backfield with Roschon Johnson and Khalil Herbert. So, and everybody knows about Caleb Williams. So that's the exciting part of it. But then if you look at what the reality of NFL football is, if you don't have complementary play from the offense and defensive line, all those other specialty positions maybe get nullified, because you have to have an offensive line that can protect the quarterback. Last year, they gave up 55 sacks. You have to have a defensive line that can create turnovers and get sacks. And last year, other than Montez Sweat, they were one of the worst in the league. So if we are talking about a 7-on-7 league, hey, the Bears are as exciting as a 7-on-7 team as there is. However, the success of this football team is going to be because of the offense and defensive line. And it's kind of weird when you think of Keenan Allen, Roma Dunze, DJ Moore, and all these other impressive offensive players we have. But if they don't get a protective offensive line with a rookie quarterback and a defensive line that can get sacks, turnovers, and stop the opponent's running game, it's got the possibility of being another frustrating year because of how good Detroit and Green Bay are.
The division was something I wanted to bring up pretty early, Tom, and you're right about that. Detroit might be the best team in the NFC, not named the San Francisco 49ers, probably are. The Green Bay, when last we saw them, they're shellacking the Dallas Cowboys in Dallas. I mean, the conversation now is, do you make Jordan Love the highest paid quarterback in the league? The Minnesota Vikings are not going to be an easy out, and they've got talent all over the field, including maybe the best wide receiver in the game. When you have a rookie quarterback, though, that plays for a big-time program and he's used to leading a team that's behind and he's having to go and do special things because the defense at USC was unable to perform at a standard of which they're probably used to, I would have to assume that makes you a little bit more comfortable that if there are weak moments, you got a guy that probably has dealt with a lot of that already in big-time college athletics.
Yeah, you know, the most encouraging thing of me about Caleb Williams, and I'm a college football fan, and I went to Notre Dame, so I pay close attention to the USC-Notre Dame games every year and a lot of other games. But, you know, it's really more of the improvement that Caleb made from his very first practice at Soldier or at Halas Hall during OTAs until the last practice he had, because the rookie stayed around a week after minicamp was over. And so just the improvement that Caleb has made in that time frame, it's visual. I mean, you can see it. It was the types of things that we are hoping that would happen with Justin Fields. And as I love Justin, I think he's a great kid, and I hope he's got a tremendous upside. However, some of the frustrating things about it was his lack of incremental improvement. And the incremental improvements that we saw out of Caleb Williams is super encouraging to the offensive weapons that he has around him, because you started to see a guy that was becoming familiar with the terminology, understanding what he was saying in the huddle, making sure that he can make the right checks at the line of scrimmage, understanding how to take advantage of the different coverages that were being shown to him. And the best thing about it is the Bears defense never took it easy on him. They were a super enthusiastic group that practiced hard and they were flying around the field, and they were trying to create the most difficult scenario for Caleb. But I think in the long run, it helped Caleb out a lot and improve at a faster rate than maybe if he wasn't playing, practicing against such a talented group.
Bears color commentator Tom Thayer joins us on the Monk's Barbecue Hotline from ESPN Radio 1000 WMVP in Chicago. What is the level of concern there locally that the first two picks, they haven't signed their deals? It's the quarterback, it's the wide receiver that you're expecting to be there for the next decade. I know J.J. McCarthy still hasn't signed, but you know, a lot of these teams that are operating in an efficient manner, you want to get your picks in, you want to make sure they're there. None of these guys have missed any time yet, but it has to be at least a mild concern that both of them have not signed their rookie deals yet.
You know, Chad, the difference in it, when I was drafted in 83 and you had five quarterbacks, including Elway and Marino, come out in the draft, there's always concern about getting a deal done so you don't have long holdouts from the first rounders. Nowadays, with the new collective bargaining agreement, I don't think there's necessarily that concern that it could go into weeks deep into training camp. To me, I think there will be a resolution to this before training camp gets underway, and Roma Dunze and Caleb Williams will both be in camp by day one, because you're not looking for these unrealistic rookie deals. And if a couple of guys sign around them, you kind of get an understanding of what's going to be allocated to you in terms of those draft choices. So I don't know. I don't worry about the holdouts as much as I did when I was coming out of college.
Tom, I've seen some rookie quarterbacks thrive with a strong running game behind them. I'll always remember Matt Ryan getting so much help from Michael Turner in the backfield, a good vet that can help, you know, balance the offense out. The Bears made efforts to bring in DeAndre Swift. How do you think that their running back field is going to work this year? Do you think it's Swift with the majority of the carries, or do you think Roschon Johnson and Herbert really step up and it's more committee?
You know, it's going to be interesting, because last year, a lot of the success of the rushing yards of the Bears was because of Justin Fields. And now if you eliminate the quarterback rushing yards, you do have to get a majority of it from the running back position. Now we're going to have to see, is the offensive line capable of dominating the line of scrimmage to whomever they hand the ball off to? DeAndre Swift, Khalil Herbert's got explosiveness inside of him, and so does Roschon Johnson. But it's going to be up to the offensive line. And if Caleb is threatening to opponents' defenses downfield because of the weapons he has, and then they got to back off the line of scrimmage a little bit, you'll probably see a little bit more productive running game led by DeAndre Swift. But if teams and defensive coordinators feel that they can take advantage of a rookie quarterback by putting a lot of bodies up at the line of scrimmage, you know, it could be a little frustrating there in terms of the overall success of the running game. So, you know, it's weird, because it's not the threat of the running ability of Justin anymore. It's more of how good of a thrower can Caleb come to make the offense as efficient as everybody's hoping it's going to be.
What do you think, Tom, about Byard comes over, Kevin Byard, and he was had so many great years with Tennessee, and he's, of course, in the latter stages of his career, I imagine, didn't work over in Philadelphia, but that is a guy that is an unquestioned leader inside of a locker room, a veteran leader of men. He's won playoff games. He's been in some rivalries, and I really feel like his addition to that defense, T.J. Edwards, so underrated. We know saw what Montez Sweat did when he came over. There's a lot of talent there, but that seems like a very good binding agent for a defense that, as you said earlier, you're really going to need them to step up and play more tenaciously this year.
Yeah, you know, I agree, because you look at Jaquan Brisker and Kyler Gordon are both second-year players, and I think they have an enormous upside in their career and where they're going. Then they got Tyreek Stevenson, a rookie that really improved throughout the second half of the season and held down the cornerback position, and then they have Jalen Johnson, who they signed to a big deal. I think Kevin Byard is just in the perfect place when you think of T.J. Edwards and Tremaine Edmonds in front of him. And if they can get that complimentary piece to Montez Sweat to come in and provide that, you know, take away that half of a second to three-quarters of a second of protection of the opponent's quarterback, I think Kevin Byard is the perfect guy for the job. I know people were a little bit frustrated with Eddie Jackson in the last couple of years. So here's a guy that can step in with a group of young guys that still need education and positive influence from a veteran. So I'm excited about what he can really offer the back end of the defense.
Where do they slot in this division, Tom? It's easy to get swept up this time of year. Everybody's feeling good. Everybody's going through the depth charts, and we're excited about seeing guys in shorts and T-shirts throwing passes in mini camps. But as you pointed out, murderer's row here in the North, and you've got three potential playoff teams that aren't named the Chicago Bears there. Realistically, is this a season two proposition where we make a run? I mean, you watch these talking head shows, and they'll just throw out Caleb Williams leading the Bears to the Super Bowl in his rookie year. Just like it's something that's definitely a possibility. Where do you think they're, you know, we're 15, 16 weeks into this season, it's wrapping up. Where do you think the Bears are going to be?
Well, you know, I think Green Bay is their biggest enemy. You know, they had no success against Green Bay last year, even though Jordan Love came aboard. They beat the Detroit in Chicago, and they should have beat them in Detroit. So I think they have a little bit of a confidence that they can go toe-to-toe with those guys. But until they go and show that they have the capabilities of beating Green Bay, then that means they're second or third best team in the division. And the one thing that I have concerned, in the 18 years of Hard Knocks, which the Bears are doing this year, no team has ever went to the Super Bowl. And I think only seven of them have went to the playoffs. So I'm not saying that's some type of excuse. It's just that I happened to look it up when they were announced to be on Hard Knocks. And so if they do go to the Super Bowl, they will be 1-19.
Do you think there's a practical reason for that? I've heard people speculate inside the industry. You're played at the highest level. You analyze the sport. Do other organizations, scouting, front office, whatever, watch Hard Knocks and gain some sort of edge? I wonder why that would. Is it just maybe a lack of, you know, focus? It's a distraction when they're trying to prepare for a season. I wonder why it would affect teams negatively that way.
Well, you know, Chad, you said it, though, distraction. If it becomes a distraction around the meeting rooms or onto the practice field, or our coach is a little reluctant to make coaching comments when the boom camera, boom microphone is hanging right over the top of them, then yeah. And then you got these cameras that are live in the meeting rooms when these guys are inserting new information. As long as something doesn't get out there that other teams are not aware of, then the Bears should be safe. But, you know, when you have Caleb Williams and you have some of the other guys, DJ Moore and Keenan Allen, so on and so forth. When you have some of these popular personalities, there's a real interest in the Bears. But since they've never been on it before, they were one of the few teams that were going to be on it. They picked the Bears, and now I think you just need to put your head down and go to work as if the cameras aren't around. You know, and Matt Eberflus and Travis Smith, the defensive line coach, they were on teams that were covered by Hard Knocks. So they're a little bit familiar with what's going to happen. So maybe they can deliver that message to the team.
Matt Eberflus, the betting favorite to win coach of the year, according to DraftKings as well. We'll have to see if the results warrant that speculation. WMVP, Chicago Bears color commentator, Tom Thayer, killing it. Great information today, Tom. Thank you so much for joining the show. Really appreciate it, buddy.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Chad.
That was Tom Thayer, everybody, on Both Types of Sports.
Thanks for listening to Both Types of Sports. Please leave a 5-star rating and review wherever you are listening to the show. And don't be afraid to share the show with a friend.